This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
You're listening to KCBS In Depth.
Really, in order to find quality care, you often have to be on a wait list that's months long.
The people, places, and issues the Bay Area is talking about.
The aggressive advocates who were looking to overrule Roe for so long, they really had no idea of the consequences they might be opening up.
In this case, there very well may be charges that are appropriate. For example, trying to obstruct an official proceeding of Congress, right? That is unlawful.
This is KCBS In Depth.
Last week, KCBS looked at the state of the environment. We touched on how cities are responding to the rising tides.
What keeps me up at night is the Muni Underground and the BART system. Those might get flooded, and so we're trying to stay ahead of that risk. Raise the ferry building about five to seven feet. We'd install jacks all the way under the building and elevate the entire building at one time.
We heard about the extreme effects of climate change.
We're seeing like these prolonged droughts, which, you know, produce all this fuel for the potential for wildfires. We saw these heavy winds the last couple winters here. And then in addition to that, you know, we have the challenges related to water and our streams and our bay and pollution. And we have air pollution. And so, you know, the Bay Area cares a lot about the environment, but, you know, we have a lot of people living in a relatively small area, and the environmental pressures are significant.
To the changes we're seeing in how we get around in the Bay Area and how different modes of transportation are better for the world.
You can ride on hills and you can pick the safest and most pleasant route with an e-bike, and you don't have to take the flattest route because the battery takes care of that. Like, once you kind of figure out all those things for yourself, it actually is really easy, and I do think it is more accessible for more people.
What we see so far in the air is the beginnings of change in the transportation system, but we'll also need to see changes in industry and home heating, and those are policies that are coming online.
And we looked at how young people are stepping up to take on climate justice.
That has definitely helped relieve it a little bit, like sharing solidarity with others who are going through the same thing, and, you know, knowing that our collective action and impact might do something for the planet.
We created tons of environmental justice resources and educational material. Communities that are seeing the worst impacts of climate change are able to raise awareness and build campaigns around those issues.
And we found out that one of the Bay Area's most beloved places, the San Francisco Zoo, is focused on all the environmental changes that the world is undergoing as well.
How do zoos and the San Francisco Zoo play a role in helping animals as their habitats and environment are changing all around the world?
Part of my job and what I would like to see all zoos and especially us move forward when we look at this is educating the public about what's going on and specifically what goes on with each animal, and so that people can understand. You have a hard time understanding what's going on if we don't educate people. So my goal here is to try to educate people about what's going on with each individual animal in different areas. And that brings up an interesting thing. So we've recently kind of switched our focus here at the zoo from, we do a really good job right now of enriching animals' lives, and we do we have a training program and an enrichment program, and we had a really big focus on trying to do better, make our animals that live here at the zoo a lot better. And as you go through the zoo, you'll see different things in the animals' environment, and that those enrichment items try to portray natural behaviors. But we're trying now to try to concentrate on bringing conservation to the forefront and educate people about certain things. And our first initiative is to try to identify our critically endangered animals that are our species that are here at the zoo, and identify them and tell people about them, because they are actually on the critical aspect of disappearing from the world forever.
Welcome to KCBS In Depth, broadcasting throughout the Bay Area and streaming on the Odyssey app. I'm Mary Hughes. We heard part of the conservation conversation on the last In Depth. Now we have the conclusion of that conversation with KCBS's Eric Thomas and Nikki Maduro speaking with Eric Kruseman, Vice President of Wellness and Conservation at the San Francisco Zoo. And they are also joined by Shelby Hasbin, Manager of Environmental Services at the zoo.
Let me ask you how hunting factors into what you do and what you try to do. Especially, you see people post pictures of big game hunting as if it's something to be proud of. Obviously, that works against what you're trying to do.
Yeah, no, yes, I know that I kind of grew up on the East Coast, and I think that some of the animals that people hunt, namely ducks, would have gone extinct if there hadn't been conservation groups that tried to save the animals so they could hunt things. I'm not a big proponent of hunting myself, but I would say that some of those things like that happen, people fish and people pay a fee, and then those funds actually go to help preserve those animals. So in a way, sometimes that works. I think going to Africa and doing that is probably not the best thing to do. I think that probably that if we have to manage those populations in a certain way, I mean, if you might like elephants, it should be done humanely, and that are moving the animals to other places and things like that. That might be a better way of doing it instead of having people just indiscriminately hunting or doing that sort of thing.
Okay. One more thing before, I think we wanted to bring Shelby in as well. Shelby, did you want to come? Okay. And she's with Environmental Services as well. But I wanted a fun question. Your favorite animal here is the Komodo. Your favorite animal is the Komodo dragon. If you had to choose an exhibit that you love here, what is it?
Oh, probably the red panda exhibit.
Oh, the red panda. So, okay.
Because I actually helped design and build that. And and the red panda there knows me personally. So
you're on a first-name basis with the panda.
So,
okay.
Yeah. And, and that's an interesting thing, because it's the people that work with animals here are really extremely passionate about their animals. And it's just interesting to me that there's a little bit of a disconnect sometimes that I see, is people say, oh, well, the animal doesn't look like it's taken care of. And there could be nothing, and maybe even to speak to that article, yeah, there could be nothing further from the truth. The people here are so passionate about what they do, and the animal keepers put a lot of time and effort into every day they work here, even to the point where they try to do work on conservation efforts outside of the zoo on their own time to try to save these animals. And that passion that they have, it just goes way beyond. It's not even a job for them. It's their life goal to try to do something. And that's something I would say, if you're walking around the zoo and you get to talk to an animal keeper, most of them are shy. Most of them don't want to talk to people. Part of the reason they took this job is because they get to work with the animals. They don't have to deal with people. But if you try to do that sort of thing, go up and talk to them, you will find that they will give you some more information than you ever probably possibly want to know about their animal. And I could probably do the same thing about the red panda. I used to do a tour for them, and they were, after an hour, they're like, okay, we give up.
We know everything about the panda.
So, yeah, no, it's interesting to have that aspect.
That's awesome. All right, Shelby, introduce yourself for me.
Hi, I'm Shelby Hasvin. I'm a manager of the Environmental Service Department.
Okay. Talk. And you're sorry. With the Environmental Service, what is that? What do you do here at the zoo under Environmental Services?
Under Environmental Services, I run the custodial department, which is part of the recycling program, composting. I'm in charge of Forklift One, which is our animal waste removal. I deal with hazmat. I deal with permits. I deal with...
So there has to be a lot of, yeah. So I guess maybe talk about the logistics of running a zoo and keeping it, I guess, as clean and green as you possibly can.
Well, we do our best. We try. I mean, it's a 100-acre zoo, and, you know, on a busy day, that can be get a little overwhelming. Right. We average 5 to 8 staff a day. And one of the things we do try here is we've introduced, we've more than tripled our composting bins, more than tripled our recycle bins. We are trying to switch out all of the garbage cans. We have no more single use in public zones. Everything is either garbage and recycling or garbage recycling compost. We've updated our stickers also on them to help with stuff we sell on ground so people can match it up a little easier, because a lot of people in the San Francisco, we know where everything goes, or we should know. But a lot of our visitors are outside of San Francisco and from around the area, and they don't recycle to the point we do. So I see them walk up to the cans and they get a little confused. So just changing out some of the stickers on stuff, items we sell or are commonly found at a zoo, like picnic items or whatever, has helped with that as well.
How much waste does a zoo of this size produce that you need to manage? I mean, you don't have to be like to the exact number, but I mean, I'm assuming it's a lot, and you don't want to add to the bad kind of waste. You don't want it to all go to the landfill or...
Yeah.
And you mentioned composting.
Yes. Most of our animal waste goes into composting, obviously, our food waste as well, horticulture waste. Some animals don't make it into compost because, like chimps, carnivore animals, anything that eats that meat diet, yeah, is going to go into the landfill, but that's a very small part of what we actually compost here. So it's not that big of a diversion there. But I actually do have some numbers. I don't know the exact tonnage, but it is in the millions a year. And we do, I'm trying to think, 120 yards probably a week of compost. We're probably about, double that because we have two pools a week. Yeah, but no, 120 of compost, about, I would say, over 100 cubic yards of recycling. And to my knowledge, we have never once filled our compactor, which is our landfill. That red light has never once come on in my history here at the zoo. So which I find something to be proud of. It's a 25 yard. We used to have a 40 yarder, which the light never came on. And when we went down to the 25 yarder, we were a little worried. And I was shocked with our new conservation and how we are sorting the garbage now and stuff. We have never even come close to filling that thing.
That's awesome.
So we average between 89.51% to 85.78% of diversion rate. So that's stuff that is not going into the landfill. Awesome. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
With that means that my staff is taking every single garbage bag, whether it's coming from a garbage can, coming from a compost bin, or coming from a recycle bin, even though it's already sorted by the public, it gets resorted behind the house. They open every single bag up, dump it on a table, and sort. Mm-hmm. And I do wonder what the... if we can go down another level, 15 yard or something for the landfill.
It's a goal,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
that would
be
the ultimate goal.
Because we're not even filling that thing halfway at this point. So
I mean, because it's important, you know, obviously this is a little microcosm of the world, right? Your zoo with the animals and everything like that. So it's important to kind of mirror what you want people to see and do inside to the outside.
Yes, definitely, yeah.
How many people are on your staff to make this happen?
Well, I have, including Forklift One, we have 14 total staff members right now that make this happen. So anywhere from 5 to 8 a day, depending on the time of the, whether it's a weekday or weekend. Yeah.
Okay. And what's your favorite exhibit at the zoo?
Exhibit wise, I would have to say probably the savannah area just because of how open and wide and green it is. But my actual favorite animal is the sloth. He's cool. He's chill, relaxed. He has a zen vibe to you. When you see him, you can't help but kind of melt away. He always looks like he's happy. And so, yeah.
In Depth will return after a moment.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age. Wisdom, experience, and knowledge. Just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's join, M-I-D-I. com.
And I didn't ask you this. Do you guys have, because I have never been to the zoo except today. This is my first time at the zoo. Do you guys do petting exhibits, like, up close and personal with the sloths or anything like that?
Well, we have... Oh, my gosh. we do have a barnyard where we actually have... You can actually have direct contact with the animals. Direct contact with the animals takes a little bit, and even with the tours I do with the red panda, we did a program where we actually could feed him something, but it was bamboo and you couldn't actually touch him. They're actually, all the animals in the zoo are tame, but they're still wild animals, so they're not the domesticated. Domestication is kind of where you go with it if you want to have anybody touch an animal. So we do have our barnyard area where we have goats and sheep that are coming soon. We actually have direct contact, but we here at the zoo like to say that we like to connect people with animals. And that connection there is like a direct contact. But even just seeing them or going up and looking at them, is we like to call that a connection. So, but yeah, no, just... The animals are, unfortunately, have teeth and claws, and that's that kind of context. So the goats do pretty good with us. We actually we actually train them so that they can have that connection and have a positive interaction, especially with young kids. I mean, I even remember when I was growing up, that was my kind of how I ended up doing this, was having a connection with a tortoise in the. Philadelphia Zoo, when they actually let you go in with the tortoises. And I know different zoos do different things with that direct connection. But it does over time, with regulations and things and diseases and all sorts of things it's become less and less, I think, over time. And I think that's the same thing with that, what you had mentioned about roadside zoos. It's those sort of things just aren't existing anymore. So it gets more and more difficult to do it. Believe it or not, with the recent, disease that we had that went through the human population called COVID. A lot of people in the zoo came, and it was kind of cool to come here because we were outside, so you could actually distance yourself, and it was nicer to be here. So when we were open during COVID, people were able to come here, and we had things where people had to separate out. But we also had people step back from the animal enclosures, and people didn't really understand that. And what a lot of people don't understand is that COVID was transferable not from people to people, but people to animals. And there were a number of animals in zoos that got sick. There were a couple of species that succumbed to the disease. There was a snow leopard, I think, in another zoo. So we actually, the keepers here were adamant about keeping and keeping people away from their animals because of that. So a lot of large cats, mustelids, which included ferrets, and our primates, we were more worried about. A lot of the primates we have behind glass anyway, so because a lot of human diseases are potentially passed to them. But with that, we were actually trying to protect our animals. We didn't care too much about the people getting the disease. We were trying to protect our animals from getting COVID.
Yeah.
And it was interesting because it's like they announced COVID. Everybody in this, every animal keeper knew about zoonotic diseases and how things transferred. And everyone was wearing a mask. Everyone was dipping their feet. We divided the whole zoo into two different groups. So if one group got sick, the other group would be able to take care of the animals. And believe me, I was here. Everyone got to sit on our couch and watch cartoons during COVID, but every animal keeper was coming in here, and we were basically essential employees who had to be here, so we had to be here for the animals, and we didn't want to give them the disease, so everyone wore masks to protect, like, more about protecting the animals than anything else, to tell you the truth.
How big a worry was avian flu for you?
Well, avian flu is a concern. At this point, we know which species kind of are more susceptible or not. If you walk around the zoo right now, we used to have peacocks that wandered through the zoo and people enjoyed them. They are no longer walking around the zoo. We have them in enclosures right now because of avian flu. We were at one point when, we actually are in contact with officials that monitor the avian flu. So if it comes within a certain distance, we have protocols that we lock things down. Some people might have visited the zoo in the past 6 months or 8 months, and nobody could go into the tropical building, which had that closed because the birds in there were potentially susceptible. We brought animals inside that are in enclosures that were covered. So yeah, it's a huge concern. And unfortunately, if something happened where avian flu got into some of our species here at the zoo, it would be devastating to everyone here because we'd have to destroy those animals because that's a priority. So we've definitely protected our animals from having that. And it seems it comes and goes with the migration of different animals, of birds. So it kind of hits at different times. So we kind of open things up, and when a case is found closer to the zoo, we close things down. So, and anything we find dead here at the zoo goes through and is tested. Yeah. So,
mm-hmm. I'm good.
Last question for you. What's the future of the industry? Where do we go in 10 years, 20 years?
Wow. Well, I've been through, that is interesting. I don't have to think about it. Maybe I'll just go through my progression of like what I've worked through. So when I first started working in zoos, the big aspect was breeding animals in captivity so we wouldn't have to take anything from the wild. And at this point, I would say even species down to insects and fish, anything you see in the zoo or an aquarium, most of it is not pulled out of the wild. Most of it is bred in captivity. So those animals from day one have been in a captive situation, mm-hmm. and they're the ambassadors for their wild brethren. Mm-hmm. But so those animals, They're accustomed or acclimated to that situation, and I think they do really well with that. And there are species that we don't have in zoos that don't do well in captivity, and that's the reason why you don't see them as often. And a lot of zoos have very similar things because we trade things back and forth. So that was kind of like where I started, and mm-hmm. then it was more about, hey, can we put them in environments that look a lot better? Can we put them in the more natural environments so that an elephant isn't in a concrete thing? We put them in something that looks, that's bigger, larger. They have natural aspects to it. And I was really into building and being involved in trying to create naturalistic environments. And some of our environments here, like our African savanna has big rock cobies, and you feel like it's like an immersion thing. You want to feel like you've been to Africa, kind of, mm-hmm. not just because you saw the animal, but it kind of like the environment's created the same way. And then we transitioned into the, what I just recently said about it, training animals. We train a lot of animals so that their stress levels are a lot less, so we can get the animals to get closer to us. We can do shots. When I first got here, we had a monkey that had diabetes and had to have insulin shot every day. So we trained the animal to come up and present it itself, and we could do insulin shots. At this point, we draw blood, we do anesthetizing of animals, all without catching them or doing anything. They voluntarily come up, and we do positive reinforcement training with a lot of animals. People do that with their dog or their cat, but we do it with lions, giraffes, and everything. I don't think we're doing insects yet, but we're getting close. And then that enrichment aspect of being able to put things in getting them to show natural behaviors and getting like the bird aspect of being able to feed birds differently so they're not just eating out of a bowl and they eat their food in 10 minutes and then in nature they spend 5 hours doing it. So to be able to do that sort of thing. And then our next step, which is kind of what we're talking about now, is being able to educate people about conservation and conserve the world we're living on. Just that whole aspect of we're on this little blue ball. And I know there's been talk about like, hey, we can colonize Mars, but you know, I think that's a ways off. And nobody's been talking about taking giraffes to Mars or anything. So just that aspect of trying to preserve and conserve what we have here on our thing and be able to live in harmony with nature. Yeah, thank you. Live in harmony with nature and do that and try to get people to understand that it's and if every community try to save what's in their backyard and that aspect of, okay, we have Golden Gate Park here and all sorts of things to be able to have that connection with some kind of outside space is really, really important for the human race, I think. And that's, so beyond that, I would think that the next step would be having that aspect of, if we could actually have that respect and that understanding of nature that we wouldn't, I would actually dream of a time where, not that I want to put myself out of business, but we wouldn't have to have zoos because everything would be preserved and we'd have nature everywhere and you wouldn't actually have to teach people, because that's my passion is that I found is that I'm going through this. Is I really love nature and I really, you know, that it means so much to me that that's my goal has been to teach everyone else about that and to try to get them to understand what I've seen and what I've experienced when I go out in nature, and just having that to the point where you don't have to, we don't have to have these institutions where that are providing educating people that we're actually have that saved, and I think we're a ways off from that. Yeah. I unfortunately, and I think the more tech that we get, I see some of that issues, like you can just see it on, you're kind of even more removed from the natural world. Yeah. And I think that's our next step, is trying to get to the point where we have these partnerships and be able to realize that we're gonna have to save everything out there.
Absolutely. All right, well, thank you so much. You're awesome.
Eric Kruseman.
Thank you so much.
All of KCBS's State of the Environment stories at kcbsradio.com. Just click on the podcast tab and go to KCBS Radio On Demand. That's where you can also hear the excitement that people are feeling about pandas coming to the San Francisco Zoo.
We have some cute, cuddly, black and white beauties coming to our city.
I think that's pretty exciting because there's red pandas here, so we see those pandas a lot, but it'll be also cool to see the other pandas.
And one thing's for sure, according to his little one, Wilma, what color are pandas?
Black and white.
You can find this episode and past episodes of In Depth online at kcbsradio.com. Click on the podcast tab and go to KCBS Radio In Depth. And you can also hear In Depth episodes on the Odyssey app. Download the app on your smartphone and favorite KCBS Radio. Thanks for listening. For KCBS and In Depth, I'm Mary Hughes.
KCBS In Depth. Get every episode by subscribing on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and other podcast platforms. Visit KCBSRadio.com for more news and interviews. We are the Bay Area's news station, KCBS.